Prison barber.
Mother lover.
Nearsighted gynecologist.
In your face, camel cake.
In your rear, cow derriere.
Lying, crying, spying, prying, ultra pig.
You lewd, crude, rude, bag of pre-chewed food dude.
Measuring Peter!
You man! Stupid, stupid man!
Rufio, if I'm a maggot burger, why don't you just eat me? You two-toned, zebra-headed, slime-coated, pimple-farming, paramecium brain, munching on your own mucus, suffering from Peter Pan envy.
What's a paramecium brain?
I'll tell you what a paramecium is. That's a paramecium. It's a one-cell critter with no brain that can't fly. Don't mess with me, man. I'm a lawyer.
This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com with a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 153, and this week we are discussing the upcoming releases, including Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, that's Sin City 2, for anybody keeping count. And If I Stay, we're going to have spoiler-free reviews of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the new one, not any of the old ones, and Into the Storm. Our From the Outside In topic this week are TV shows that nobody is talking about. We have latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. With me today are my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
I'm curious, is the word dame considered a derogatory term these days?
Not if it's shot in black and white.
That's right. Same with broad.
Yep.
Is it?
Ooh, I'm not touching broad. Brian Williams?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Not much. And Justin McCumber?
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing, man?
Doing great.
No, you're doing well.
No, I'm doing pretty great.
No, it's bad grammar.
Is class in session? we are going to have a little bit of a tweak this week. We've changed the format. Don't panic. Don't leave. Everybody's rushing for the doors. We just kind of streamlined a few things, so you guys let us know if you like it or even if you notice. Some of you might shut it off 10 minutes in and never even know anything changed. So I probably should just
shut it off 10 minutes in. We've made it 3 minutes so far.
Yeah, 7 minutes.
But then
we got
the download, so we really don't care.
Hey, I care. We are going to talk about Robin Williams. Everybody is aware that he did pass away. And if you aren't aware, I'm sorry that I'm the one that broke it to you. You could obviously do better than hearing it from me. But there are some things we want to say about it, but we don't want to do it just yet because some people come to the show to feel better, not to get bummed out. So what we're going to do is we're going to save it to the end of the show. So it'll be where the outtakes normally are. So that way, if you don't want to hear about it, you don't have to. And if you do want to, then there it is. You can skip right to the end, and there we are. How's everybody's week been? Justin, you just went to Houston Con, right? You're selling some books. How was that?
I sold some books, not nearly as many as I wanted to.
So you're still forced to do the podcast, is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I'm still have to fucking be here. Had some friends come visit that live in the area that I do the... Or I used to do the Dead Robot Society podcast with, and we'll probably be resuming soon. So we got to hang out, get some drinks, eat some really good food. But just had a good time, met nice people, did sell a few books, took some pictures of a few of them, put them up on my Facebook wall. And I think I probably bought more than I made in sales. So I just love going around to the different booths to see what people are selling, and I invariably bring home too many toys, but I couldn't pass up this giant Stay Puffed Marshmallow bobblehead.
Get out.
One of those pop figures. Nice. It's a real, kind of a popular brand that's been putting out a lot of these either bobbleheads or just small, cute figurines of popular characters. I got a big Wampa that's a bobblehead and a big Stay Puffed.
Nice.
And then they've got a Sharknado little one, which even though I'm not a fan of the show, the figurine is really cute.
They have a Sharknado figurine?
Yeah, it's like this blue tornado with just a big shark sticking out of it.
Lord have mercy.
It's cute. And then I found a Pacific Rim toy that I didn't have yet and had planned on getting from Amazon, but the guy who was selling it was like selling it for even cheaper than Amazon had it. So I had to pick that up too. So yeah, my childish office got more childish. But it's cool.
Well, hey, let me know when you hit puberty, and I'll send you some porn.
Will do.
Speaking of manly stuff, we're gonna have an expendable spoiler cast next week. Or it'll be probably Monday, I think. Monday or Tuesday it'll be out. So check for that. Brian and I are going to talk about the most manly franchise ever to hit the screen.
And yeah, there won't be any toys or, you know, dolls on that one.
Hey, I had action figures, so I'm not making fun of them. Don't try to act like you didn't have. You probably have
I did, but I stopped.
There was a guy at the con selling an autographed picture of Expendables 1 with all of the actors having signed it. Now I'm glad I didn't buy it for you, Aaron.
I kind of thought
about buying it for you, but it was just a little more pricey than what I had on me, and I'm kind of glad it happened that way now.
Hey, I'm not the one that made fun of you. Why?
Yes, well, you did.
I did not.
Talk about no figures. Talk about.
I said I did own it. I do own action figures, and therefore I was not going to make fun of you, is what I said. You should listen before you attack people. You're a horrible listener.
And you know what? I'm not going to make fun of you.
Scott, did I or did I not just defend him?
You did defend him. I'm kind of confused, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look at that. I got lashed out.
Even Scott's confused, and he's right there.
No, he's saying he's confused over your actions, because he's like,
no, I'm sure he meant you.
No.
Michael Bay passed on Transformers 5.
He also said he's going to pass on Transformers 4.
Yeah, but I think he's definitely going to this time, which
I'm happy about.
I'm really kind of happy about it. Even though I didn't dislike the movie, I want somebody new to take the threshold, the reins.
The what?
Take the reins. I want him to take the reins.
Take
I want somebody
the threshold.
New. To, just shut up. I want somebody new to take the reins.
Up the door and just carry it around.
But you're supposed to carry things over the threshold, not carry the threshold.
Who do you guys? I'm not talking to you if you keep it up. Everybody's going to go back to their room. What do you guys think? Is there anybody that you would want to take over the franchise? Like, is there anybody that could make it something different, or would it just be the same thing no matter who they brought in?
Does it need to be anything different?
I say Josh Trank takes it over and turns it back into like a bunch of young Transformers figuring out they can turn into things. That seems to be what he's did that with Chronicle. That seems to be what he's doing with Fantastic Four.
I see what you did.
Figure he can do it with Transformers.
Transformers.
I see what you did there.
Transformers going through puberty.
Oh, no.
Oil's coming out of places it shouldn't.
And one of them's angrier than the others, you know.
That sounds like a Michael Bay version.
The Russo brothers would, I think, make an interesting.
The Captain America guys?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I can't remember who it was, but someone on the Facebook page said, I can never pronounce it, but Neil Blomkamp?
Neil Blomkamp, yeah. That would be a great pick.
That would be good.
It would be a very gritty sci-fi version. I would like, and I want it on Cybertron. If you're going to do it, just go for it.
Yep.
Well, let's go to movie and TV news. There's a lot of other movie news going on besides Michael Bay, and I'm sure some people are just sick of hearing that guy's name. So, Justin, this just happened before we started recording, so why don't you tell people what happened with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
Well, apparently we are going to be getting a film that is about Mary Shelley and who wrote Frankenstein instead of it just being another Frankenstein monster. I like getting these films that's more about the creator of the story and less about the story that they're so famous for. But what they've done is they've hired Sophie Turner, who plays on Game of Thrones. She plays Sansa Stark. And if you have ever seen commercials, she's usually the one with the long red hair, just beautiful blue eyes. Very pretty girl. But she's going to be playing Mary Shelley opposite Jeremy Irving, who I haven't seen anything he's in. Apparently he was in War Horse and Stonewall, but he'll be playing her husband, Percy Shelley, who, for those who like poetry, know he's a famous poet. But it's going to be about her life and leading up to the writing of Frankenstein and then, you know, kind of how her life goes after that, though I'm sure all historical accuracy will be sacrificed for the romance and drama of it all. But, you know, it's all right. You kind of got to give those things up if you want to get people into a theater.
It's also going to have Thaisa Farmiga in it. She was in American Horror Story for that season.
But she was actually in it for two seasons. She was in the first season and then the third. But she'll be playing Mary Shelley's stepsister, Claire Claremont.
Oh, okay. That actually sounds like a cool concept.
I think
I just assumed, because I didn't get a chance to read. This is one of the ones I didn't get a chance to read. I thought it was going to revolve around Frankenstein. So you're actually saying it's telling the story of the writer.
Correct.
Right, Mary Shelley. Now, she actually published it anonymously when she was 21 years old. That's impressive.
That is impressive. And it's lasted
a long time.
Quite a while. Two more dates have been picked out for Lego films from Warner Brothers, which makes it a total of four films that are now slotted over the next 5 years. Scott, I know you loved Everything is Awesome. Do you think we're already milking this cow before it even gets going?
I really don't. I think this is a smart move because, well, for a number of reasons, but mainly that kind of film is generational. You're going to always have a new audience every few years of kids that are just discovering Legos for the first time or are growing up with their really younger years watching the first movie or the first two or three movies. By the time you get to four or five, I think I don't doubt that that'll still make a lot of money.
Now, the way I'm understanding it is they're going to break it up a little bit. It's not going to be just the Lego movie as we know it. There's going to be a couple of variations.
Well, that's the worry I have is that it's the only concern I really have is...
You don't want it to stray from that?
It's hard not to because the novelty of the first film was the fact that it was a Lego movie and how pretty the graphics were and that kind of thing and him discovering that he was a Lego master or whatever they called it. I mm-hmm. can't remember. That novelty will have worn off by the second film. So you kind of have to hit the ground running with story-wise and the way that movie ended, which I won't spoil here, but you're going to have to do some real clever things to reach that what they did with the first one.
So you don't want them to do like what they do with games and books and stuff where it's like Star Wars Lego and Pirates Lego. You don't want those kind of stories. You just want it to be its own world.
No,
kind of
yeah, I want it to be its own thing. I would like to just see all new characters, not even bring back any other, maybe a cameo from
oh, like every movie's different?
Mm-hmm. That's what I would like to see. And I mean, that way you have a whole fresh cast. You've got a whole fresh idea. You got to start from scratch. Because I mean, really, where do you go from there? I don't know. I mean, they had the whole I'm ruining the.
Yeah, don't spoil. It just came out on Blu-ray, so.
I haven't seen the first one yet, although I'm already tired of that Everything is Awesome song.
I'm sure you are. Everybody is.
I really don't care what they really do with this. I mean, it's a hit. It's making money. I mean, they do it with any other franchise, that especially, you know, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's just not something that necessarily gets me excited.
I'm not too bothered one way or the other. I really enjoyed the Lego movie, but there's nothing about that particular story that I think needs to be carried over into another one. They should just make a brand new adventure with a new set of characters. And I think every movie probably should be its own standalone thing. I think that sounds like a better idea than trying to sequelize the hell out of it.
Just different variations of the song. Some things are awesome.
This is pretty cool.
That's what I
said. These are moderately okay.
Well, what about HBO?
Well, that's how you know the movies are trending down.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
like, yeah, you know what? This kind of sucks.
Steven right. Seagal pops up for a cameo. That's when you know it's over.
Right.
I want to see Steven Seagal as a Lego figure.
He is a Lego. Would watch any of his movies.
Would the ponytail be like painted on the back of the head or actually be a real ponytail?
It unsnaps. They peg it back in. They landed Ed Harris for the villain for HBO's Westworld adaptation, which is, I think, pretty cool because it has a stellar cast. Brian, I know Game of Thrones is huge with you, but outside of that, HBO and True Detective, there aren't really any other solid HBO shows. Is this something that now you would be interested in?
Yeah, this interests me. Just enjoyed the original version of Westworld. I don't think the original really holds up very well now.
What is it exactly? Can you explain it?
It's being billed as a dark odyssey about the dawn of artificial consciousness and the future of sin. It's kind of like a theme park. You go and experience what it was like to be in the Wild West, and all these characters that you see are robots, or, you know, whatever they want to call it now. So it's Yul Brynner was the main star in the original version. But in this one, it's got like Anthony Hopkins, Jeffrey Wright. I mean, Ed Harris was just signed, Evan Rachel Wood. They are bringing on a huge cast, and it's got to have some hella good writing.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it's got to be Anthony Hopkins. It's got to be phenomenal. So,
yeah.
I mean, I trust HBO. I'll talk about one of their shows a little bit later, but for the most part, if they start something new, then I'm going to give it a chance if it's something that's in my wheelhouse.
Especially with this combination. Not only is it HBO, but you've got J.J. Abrams involved. You've got that cast.
Is he, like, producing every show on television now at this point?
Seems like
it's him and Roberto Orsi.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I think they should just call it the Abrams Network. Just every network. It feels like he's got a hand in everything, or
you see
one of
bad
his minions.
Robot everywhere.
I do. That's what I'm saying. I do. Yeah, I think it's a cool concept. The movie was interesting. I don't know if I'd call it great. I don't know if I'd call it a classic. I like the story more than I like the movie.
And I haven't seen it or even heard of it before that. You said they talk about the future, and it was that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do they go? Is there any? Didn't talk about like what the future is now or even further.
I can't even remember that. Brian, do you remember the time frame, what the year was?
I sure don't. I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen it, but it's.
Feel free to Google it, kids.
Well, it's one of those things that's interesting if you look at a quote time travel or a sci-fi thing that was done years and years ago, comparing it to how you would do it now. You know what I mean? With the technology already, like our technology today would be considered obviously the future, but way ahead of it, way, way into the future.
Way.
We need to go even further currently.
Way.
Yeah, a lot of those movies were pretty optimistic on where, you know, because a lot of that stuff, we are living in the time frame that they would make, they made that movie, let's say, late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going, oh, wait, I mean, 2001, A Space Odyssey, 2010. I think they were a little bit optimistic on where we would be in, you know, 30 to 40 years.
Flying cars years. Next year, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't look like I don't see a year specified. So it's one of those in the future, in the near future kind of things. We'll see what happens. And apparently we lost two other people this week. We lost Mr. Golan, who brought us Manahem Golan passed away. He was a producer. He brought us classics like Delta Force, Over the Top, Masters
classics.
Of the Universe. Yeah.
Wow. That's
hey. B movies are popular for a lot of people. Just because you didn't like them doesn't make them awful.
I have.
I don't know.
Over the Top is one of the most inspirational movies ever made.
Exactly.
Didn't that star Demi Moore
Death
when
Wish.
She was a little boy?
What?
That little boy looks like Demi Moore.
Right? Oh,
in that movie.
Death Wish. He did Death Wish. I love Death Wish.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See, he's
I have
got
good,
a couple.
I've got good memories of watching Delta Force. That's just a dumb, fun movie.
Every movie he made was dumb.
Yeah.
But most of them were fun. In a bad way. And also we lost Lauren Bacall. Oh, Lauren Bacall.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I was a huge fan. I haven't seen all of her movies, but I was a fan. I thought that The Big Sleep that she did with her husband, Humphrey Bogart, was just a fantastic performance from both of them. In spite of all of her amazing performances, she was never nominated for an Academy Award until 1997.
I knew that.
Yep, she did a movie with Barbara Streisand called The Mirror Has Two Faces. I can't believe it took that long to get around to at least nominating her
for an
Academy Award.
She's never won one either.
Nope, never did. But she was a beautiful woman. She had a great voice, a great talent, and she will be missed by her friends and family and fans. And, man, that's three this week.
That's a bad week.
Mm.
Okay, before we go to Brian's Trailer Park, I do want to say, if you wanted to see Brad Pitt's Fury movie, they moved it up a full month to October 17th, so you can see it even quicker.
I don't even remember that happening.
A movie that big, getting moved up a month is pretty rare. It must be fantastic. That's what I'm guessing. Just give it more awards time, and I think because Gravity was such a hit last year.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. Well, first up is The Book of Life. It's a journey of Manolo, a young man who was torn between fulfilling the expectations of his family and following his heart. But before choosing which path to follow, he embarks on an incredible adventure that spans three fantastical worlds where he must face his greatest fears. Now, Guillermo del Toro, or GDT as I like to call him, you know, because we're tight like that, you know, just saying, you know. I know Justin, he's one of your favorite movie creators. I would say director, right? But he does it, pretty much does it all. I think he even edits and does the special effects too. Is this, is that enough to get you into this cartoon?
The CGI in this film looks fantastic. It's got this whole Mexican Day of the Dead thing going. I think when we talked about this back when the first trailer came out, I said that I was glad to see a CGI film come out that dealt with a culture other than ours. And I still stick by that. This looks really, really good. It's got Channing Tatum doing a voice in it, Zoe Saldana doing a voice. I don't know who does the voice of the the Latin hero in it, but it's colorful, it's beautiful, and I really can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I think the art style is really, really interesting and original. Like Justin said, the color palette is just very pleasant, which mm-hmm. is interesting considering it's based on, you know, something called the Day of the Dead, which I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not familiar with that from a cultural standpoint at all. So that alone gets me interested just to kind of learn about that a little bit. Outside of that, I'll be honest, if it didn't have Guillermo del Toro's name attached to it, I probably would have glossed over it. But hearing that he was involved in it made me perk up and pay a little bit more attention to it. I'm pretty excited to see it, though, for a few reasons.
Cool. Well, it does open October 17th. And now we've seen Kristen Stewart. She's been pouty wearing black, wearing armor. Now we get to see her pouty wearing fatigues. Camp X-Ray is about a soldier assigned to Guantanamo Bay, and she befriends a man who's been in prison there for like 8 years. Now, Aaron, does this look like another Kristen Stewart movie, or does the deeper story draw you in?
I think these are the kind of roles she should play, because she's just not somebody that can play anything other than dour. But when she does dour, if as long as there's no vampires, I think she does a fine job. And I admire her. I think the title's awful, Brian. The Camp X-Ray is just a really bad title.
That's like a B-movie.
It does sound like a B-movie, and it seems like a very dark story. It seems like a very deep story. I love movies like this, especially with like political backdrops. Trying to decide, is this prisoner, is he a hero? Is he a villain? I mean, what is he? Is he somebody just caught in the wrong circumstances? Is it, what's happening to him fair? It seems like they're trying to do social commentary, and I love social commentary films. And I actually think she holds her end. So yeah, I do want to see it.
I will admit it does look a little bit more interesting than what I would kind of, I guess, expect from a Kristen Stewart movie. It does, like you say, you're not really sure what's going on as far as what's happening with this guy. Is he, you know, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he just a silver-tongued devil that's, you know, talking an impressionable girl into whatever, trying to free him or whatever they got going on? So I am curious about it. I am going to remain open-minded with this because it is, I don't know. I'm not as loving of social commentary movies as you are.
Oh, well.
I just, you know.
You don't want to hear about them? You're just like, CNN sucks. I don't care what's going on in my world. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I go to a movie to escape that kind of bullshit. So I don't want to get, I don't want to have the freaking movie tell me why something in the world is wrong. You know, I go there to escape reality, not have it sneaked into my conscience.
I don't think they're sneaking it. I think they're jamming it in with a fucking hammer.
I don't care if they're, you know, shooting it at me with a fire hose or sipping it in, you know, slipping it into my drink. I don't, you know. Don't want it.
Got it.
I want to get away from it.
I love movies that will come along that'll make me think, and this is one of those.
I don't mind thinking. I just don't want to be preached to. All right. Well, let's see. You can check out these trailers and a lot more at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's lots of ways to keep up with your favorite hoes. Call us or text us at 818-81-I'm-A-Ho. That's 818-814-6246. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Join our group. It's a lot of fun on there. Tweet us at @H_outsider. And you can get your I'm a Ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Yeah, and the group is, there's a link in the show notes for the Facebook group.
All right, folks, we've got three films we're going to be discussing this week, all of them opening up on August 22nd. The first one, If I Stay. This is a drama directed by R.J. Cutler, based on a novel by Gail Forman. Stars Chloe Grace Moritz, Joshua Leonard, Stacey Keach, Gabrielle Rose, and Jamie Blackley. Life changes for an instant for young Maya Hall after a car accident puts her in a coma. during an out-of-body experience. She must decide whether to wake up and live a life far different than she had imagined, or fade away into death. Our young Miss Moritz is only one less than a year away from legality. Brian, I know that has to be making you excited. Is this film one that you want to go out and check out?
It's not usually the type of movie that I'm drawn into, but I got to admit, by the end of the trailer, I was a little bit sappy. So it did.
Got dusty.
Must have been, you know, some allergies or something going on. I don't know. But interesting concept. I am intrigued by it a little bit. It did look appealing, just with the coma thing. It's not. I guess it's neat to see it being just somebody in a coma versus somebody that's just outright dead and stalking the person they love. So.
God, you just made this movie sound creepy. I don't know what just
happened. No, it could have been creepy.
Could have been creepy. Sorry.
I'm with Brian. I really like the premise. The only problem I have is I feel like I've seen the whole movie in the trailer, except for the final decision at the very end, which can go one of two ways.
Yeah, they show everything. Yeah, it feels like they show everything.
There was a couple scenes in that trailer. Like, man, I really wish I would have seen that with the whole movie behind it instead of, you know, with more lead up instead of seeing it in the trailer. So,
like when she had dinner with that Wookiee? That was fucked up.
I think you were watching a different trailer.
I think so too.
Smoking something, I want.
I really got to start paying attention. I think it looks good, but I would not probably pay for it in a theater. It's a rental for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because it's the end of summer movie. Whenever you get to the end of the summer and they have those serious dramas, for me it always feels like you're just shoveling it out the door because it wouldn't have played any other time of year. So we're just throwing it in a theater so it gets a little bit of advertising, and then we'll put it on DVD in a month.
Did you guys recognize anybody else besides her, besides Kluger and Smritz? I didn't recognize any of the actors. Like, well, no, there's the one, the older gentleman that was like at her bedside or whatever.
Stacy Keach.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I recognized him, but I didn't recognize any of the younger actors at all.
It's probably a good thing.
Well, I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
What were you going to say, Justin? I cut you off. I know that's rare, but... I did get
there. No, I think it looks good. When it comes to teenage drama films, they can so easily go down a sappy path that a more mature person such as myself just you could feel it from the trailer.
Says like, the guy who was purchasing dolls at a convention just a couple days
They're
ago.
Action figures, motherfucker. Not dolls. So check yourself.
Okay.
I'll definitely watch it when it comes out for rental, but no, it's not one of those movies I've got to run out to a theater and check out. Now, we get to a movie that I've never fucking heard of until Aaron put this format together. It's called When the Game Stands Tall. It's a sports drama that is directed by Thomas Carter, and it stars Jim Caviezel, Alexander Ludwig, Michael Chiklis and Laura Dern, as well as Clancy Brown, who I normally do like. The journey of legendary football coach Bob Loedeker. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Sure.
Who's played by Jim Caviezel, who took the De La Salle High School Spartans from obscurity to a 151-game winning streak that shattered all records for any American sport. I am not the sports guy to go to, so Aaron, I'm going to head over to you. Have you heard of this film? I mean, obviously you put it in here, but I mean, have you been overtaken with commercials and trailers? Because I ain't seen a one.
It's a quote unquote wide release. I think it's probably like 2,000 theaters. It's getting a wide release.
Are they advertising strictly on ESPN? Or
probably.
I've seen it.
I saw it in front
I've
of
seen
movie.
A lot of commercials for it lately.
Yeah. See, it's one of those, they're just ramping it up a week or two before it comes out.
Yeah, we're just ramping up to football season two. And I saw it in front of one of the movies I saw a couple weekends ago. So.
Yeah, it looks like insert sports motif cliche here movie. Mm-hmm. And I like Jim Caviezel. I mean, he's a good Jesus. But I don't know if I want to run out and see him as football coach.
What interests me most about this trailer that I haven't seen done in a football movie, because as Justin knows, living in Texas or football is like a religion down there. They take high school football so seriously. Mm-hmm. And they actually are going at this movie from an angle of, hey, there's more to life than just football.
That ain't going to play down here.
Yeah. I know. Nobody in Texas is going to see it.
Right. But I appreciate that they're actually taking that angle on it for once.
Well, they're wrong. There's nothing more to life than football.
I mean, this is high a school state football? Where a high school spent like $60 million to build just a stadium.
Oh, yeah, wow. They've got stadiums that house that can sit more people than NFL stadiums. So
yeah,
it's insane. Yeah, it's crazy.
And isn't it, Brian? Correct me. I mean, they were won forever, and then they just lost a game, and that just kills their momentum. Really, that's really what the scope of this film is about.
Yeah, I mean, well, think about it. For the last, let's say, a high school plays what 12, 13 games in a year.
Mm-hmm.
If that many. So to go 150, I mean, you're like, say that's over, I mean, 10, years. 12 years without losing a game. Multiple classes have gone from freshman to senior and never lost a game. And that's happened over and over and over. And now you're the first team to lose a game. And yeah, how do you deal with that? It is adversity.
Yeah, but at the and same time,
how do you deal with that?
It seems like they flip a switch in the trailer and they go from being this awesome football team to like Little Giants or something. One of those kids movies where they're
how
like,
are we going to win?
Yeah. Like how are
we... same way you did all those years before up until that one game.
Right. I get what Brian's saying though too, but it just seems like, and obviously it's a 2-minute trailer.
It's not just, well, we lost a game. All right. Pick it, forget about it. And then
we've disgraced our school.
Practice a little harder. Now you've got to deal with it's that embarrassing feeling.
Well,
that
and the coaches are allowed to beat.
This is stuck
players.
With us.
Wait, what?
Just kidding. Texas, we can beat our players if they don't live up.
I thought that was actually a real thing for a second. I'm like, you can do that in Texas? I would have sent my kids there years ago. I'm like, beat them up.
How sad is it? Because that's kind of believable.
Hey, I'm all for it. Whoop their ass. I think it looks all right, but I'm never going to pay $10 to see
it. Feedback at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
I don't believe in abusing children. But if they run
depends
into
on the child.
If they fall into a wall repeatedly.
Let's not just throw that all out.
But if they had it coming.
Kids.
That's right. There are some children that just got it coming.
Sometimes you hire people to do it for you.
That's right. All right, well, let's get to the last one, folks. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. Now, this one's written by Frank Miller and directed by Frank Miller and Robert Rodriguez. This, of course, stars a bevy of celebrities. Mickey Rourke, Jessica Alba, Josh Brolin, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Rosario Dawson,
Darcy.
Bruce Willis, and my most frequent celebrity crush, Ava Green. Now, co-directors Robert Rodriguez and Frank Miller reunite to bring Miller's visually stunning Sin City graphic novels back to the screen in A Dame to Kill For, weaving together two of Miller's classic stories with new tales. The town's most hard-boiled citizens cross paths with some of its more notorious inhabitants. Scotty, is this the film that you're most anxious to see this week, or is it the football one?
It's definitely this one. I love this art style. I love the art style on the first one. And this one just looks to be it looks to be a little more cohesive. I felt the first one, while I liked it, felt it jumped around and was a little bit confusing. This one seems to maybe have tightened that up a little bit. The only thing that bugs me about this trailer, and maybe it's done on purpose, is the action scenes, like when they're riding on a motorcycle or riding in a car and you see everything like flash, mm-hmm. It looks so fake, like they're sitting in front of a green screen.
Am I the only one that thinks that? I think the visual style actually looks less good now than it did in the original.
It may be the years.
That's kind
have done
of
that to
what
us.
I think with the fake thing, because I think the first one looked great, and this one I think doesn't look as good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks as good, but I just think it looks the same. And we've kind of seen it before.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's because it's so old.
Maybe. How long ago was that one?
9 years.
9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord. Has it been that long?
Yep. 9 years, man. They could have waited a year and done a 10-year anniversary sequel.
It's been a while.
Don't do it.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
See, you couldn't sing it because you said it. So that's
right.
The rule.
Oh. I can't.
Somebody had to. I got your back, baby.
Or you both could have skipped it. You could have done that. We could have went that way.
That song is forever ruined for me now. I'm never going to be able to hear Stain without thinking of Justin on the podcast.
There you go. Anybody excited for this one, though? I am. I'm really looking forward to seeing this one. It's easily my pick. But it's mostly just for the dialogue and the delivery. The action, I'm sure, will be fine. But I like more just listening to these people spit out Frank Miller's dialogue.
I got to tell you, I'm less psyched on it the closer I get to it. So, you know, where I was pretty pumped, then I got a little dissuaded, then I got a little bit more amped up. I need to see some reviews. I think it's been so long. It was such a novelty. I need to know that. And the last couple of Robert Rodriguez movies have not been some of his better work, in my opinion, especially Machete Kills. Oh, God. So I'm very leery about what I'm getting. So mm-hmm. I want to see some reviews coming out. That's one of the few movies I will look at reviews.
I'd be a little leery. I don't know if this is one that, to me, this movie is similar to, say, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where I don't trust the reviewing public to tell me whether I should see it or not, because I don't think it's the kind of film that reviewers even really want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
All right, guys. Well, of these three films coming out on August 21st, If I Stay, When the Game Stands Tall, and Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
Sim City, A Dame yeah. to Kill For.
Scotty would have been a lot more excited if it had been Sim City.
Oh, he'd be squeeing right now.
Which of these three are you most likely to go and check out, Brian?
Kind of got to echo Aaron a little bit here. I'm Sin City. I'm just not as pumped for it as I thought I would be.
Mm-hmm. Aaron? So.
It's like sticking my hand in a litter box. Sin City, I'm just going to... Whatever comes
what?
Out.
Wow. What does that mean?
What does that
mean? It means I feel like I'm getting shit no matter what I grab for. So, Sin City, Dame to Kill
you
For.
You could get, like, those pee bricks that, you know, in there, too. It's not just shit. It's like, you know, the...
I don't have a cat. I don't know what you're talking about.
I have six, and I know what he's talking about.
I know what he's talking about, too. You have six cats?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my
five
Lord.
Dogs. We're hoarders.
I don't want to stick my hand in his litter box. That's gross. What about you, Scotty?
Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
There you go. Well, we'll just make it a sweep. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
All right. Box office. Quick recap. Turtle Power took over as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles earned a whopping $65 million. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody. Nobody. The Guardians of the Galaxy dropped to orbit a little bit with 55% drop to $42 million for $176 million total.
Even better the second time.
It's, yeah.
Isn't it? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Into the Storm blew in about $17 million. It's not bad, but it's not Twister money. The 100-Foot Journey, which nobody saw. I'm really bummed.
What the fuck is this movie? I've never heard of
it. It's a Helen Mirren movie. God. If you had more culture, you would know.
True.
It trekked to number four with $10.9 million. And breaking a leg way back in sixth place was Step Up All In. We didn't even talk about it because we just don't care. With $6.4 million.
Well, I do, but I know I'm alone in that.
Well, you didn't bring it. You could have brought it up. You bring it up any other time you want to talk about something. Aaron, have we got 12 minutes? Can I talk about this thing?
Of this movie. The version that's got all the bullshit in between the dancing and the version that's just got the dancing. Because that's the version I would see.
Was this one in 3D, so you got people, like, dancing in your face?
I don't know. God, I hope so.
Well, it didn't make much, so I don't know if you're going to get a step up, whatever, do-si-do.
Don't those do better on video?
Overseas? Oh, I'm sure they're sure. Huge overseas.
Oh.
Like, every step up movie makes $100 million total overseas, if you can believe it. Swear it. Swear it.
The Argentinian tango on last week's Safety Geek Dance was magnificent.
The TMT sequel has already been announced. It will be out June 3rd, 2016. So you are going to get a Ninja Turtle sequel. Megan Fox shall return. And do you guys want to predict what's going to be number one out of Justin's picks, Justin's movies I just talked about? I'm guessing Sin City. I think that's a pretty simple pick.
Oh, and for number one for next week?
Yeah, when it comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What's this movie?
Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what that clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was Brian's, and it was The Prestige.
Well, Brian, yay. You picked a great film.
You sure did.
Yep.
Lots of compliments on that. Sure did. Lots of compliments. Those that got it correct: D.A. Cheney, Pablo Meza, Joseph Haring, Scott Calgaro, Katie M., Krista, Ashley Stewart, John Davenport, Amy Hutchinson, Marshall Maddox, Kristen Dew, Steve Peterson, and Brad Peterson. Congratulations to all of you guys. There's only about three words removed, and it would have actually said The Prestige. So I love it. Well, this week it's my turn, so if you think you know what this clip is, email us and we'll give you a shout out. Here's your clip. This is a lot harder. Much, much harder. Here you go.
Sometimes a trauma in a present life can lead you back to a trauma in a past life. If you resolve that past life trauma, I think you got a real good chance of finding out who you are. You take what you learn from this life and you use it in the next. That's karma.
I thought karma was I do something bad in this life, I'm a termite in the next one.
Hey, you ask me, you're already a termite in this life in a shitty suit, okay?
What good is learning anything if you're going to be with different people each time?
You're not going to be with different people. Thanks to fate, the only cosmic force with a tragic sense of humor, you burn somebody in one life, they get a chance to burn you back in this one. It's a karmic credit plan. Buy now, pay forever.
Okay, we're back, and I thought that one was going to be a lot harder, but Justin got it, so I'm guessing you guys can probably get it, because he's simple.
What the fuck does that mean?
Simple Jack. Now, let's go to reviews. We talk about any new releases. Scott's trying not to laugh. We saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm going to try.
You're my best friend.
Justin, you and Scott can take this one. I might weigh in once or twice, but you guys can handle the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, today I went and saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, directed by Jonathan Liebsman. It stars Megan Fox and Will Arnett with William Fichtner. This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so it requires even less sense be made and less, you know, explosive action than the Transformers requires. Scotty, what did you think of this film overall when you went to go see it? And what did you like about the story, if anything? Or what did you think of it?
I'm probably in the minority here, but I was extremely disappointed in this movie. To be perfectly honest, when I sat down to prep my review here, I could not for the life of me remember what the story was. That's how forgettable it was. I had to look it up again to remember what the actual plot of this movie was. It was just
I'll remind you in a minute.
What's that?
I'll remind you in a minute.
Okay. I've got reservations because part of my problem is I'm comparing it to how I felt about this, like the TV series when I was a kid. It's impossible to go to this movie and not think of that and compare it to that. So to be fair, it had that going up against it, but every scene just felt awkward and over the top silly, but not in a fun way to me. So what about you?
I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought that I would. Now, it is a Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, so I wouldn't say I turned my brain off, but I definitely kind of give it a couple of hours off to just coast along with it. The story is very basic. I mean, it's all about the Ninja Turtles having been a scientific experiment that people thought had been destroyed, come to find out that it hadn't. It's got, you know, Shredder trying to take over New York City. The problem that I thought I was going to have with this movie was Megan Fox. And I have to admit, she was good in it. I never got a sense of this diva actress playing the role. She seemed, you know, kind of invested in it the whole time. And the actor I didn't care for at all was Will Arnett. I mean, the guy's old enough to be her father.
He's creepy.
And yet he is macking on her the whole time. I mean, they really should have just stuck some B-grade level actor about her age in that role, and it would have been much better. He was almost distracting.
See, I felt completely opposite, man. I was distracted by Megan Fox because to me it just felt like she was just reading off of a script. I
thought she did a good job.
I mean, she was in it. I just her line just felt awkward to me. She just felt so out of place when this. Maybe it's because I've seen Transformers and I was kind of expecting the same character, which obviously isn't fair. But I enjoyed Will Arnett. He seemed to be the only one to me that was actually dialed into his character. Like he didn't seem like he was acting to me. He felt like he was being himself or the character that was written on the page.
Yeah, we're completely opposite on that. He felt like he was just earning a paycheck, whereas I actually felt like she actually was kind of having fun being in this ninja, you know, turtle movie. And I liked her. I thought she was doing it. Now, when I say she did a good job, I'm not saying she should be up for any Academy Awards.
Right.
To the no on that. But she didn't kill anything for me, which in this kind of movie could easily happen. And she didn't. I ultimately, now, as far as the acting goes, you know, these turtles, of course, are CGI generated, but they are voiced by humans and motion captured off of human beings. What did you think of the turtles?
What I actually did appreciate here is that they kept the same characters that I'm familiar with. You know, Michelangelo was the stoner one or the party guy. Raphael was kind of the a-hole. Leonardo was a leader. Donatello was the techie guy or whatever. That they kept it. And some of Michelangelo's lines, I actually genuinely laughed. I thought it was really funny. Mm-hmm. So I did appreciate that.
I can feel my shell tightening.
What about you?
I loved them. I actually, if... I was really worried about how these bigger, more muscular, tougher turtles were going to feel given the previous iterations of the turtles that we've seen. But I think this is actually the best version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as visualized on the screen that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. They look fantastic. I thought the voice acting was just fine. I wish that I could have seen some more of their moves, but some of the fights take place in these confined dark spaces, so they're not entirely clear all the time. But when you do, like on the snowy elements that you see in the trailers, it really looked cool. And I'm hoping that in the next movie, since we don't have to talk about their origins and all of that nonsense, we can just focus on them, that it'll be an even more pleasant experience. But I think these turtles were absolutely kick-ass looking. And I was really entertained.
See, I thought they looked kick-ass from the neck down.
Like the face. Yeah, that didn't bother me. I thought it might, but it didn't.
It was one of those things I just didn't understand why it needed to be changed. Obviously, it needed to be changed from the original movies. That was ridiculous. But it just felt like it was a different something else other than Ninja Turtles. So, and the action scene seemed messy to me. The best way I could describe it to someone that hasn't seen it is like, it's like a less crisp version of Transformers. Like it's like trying to go for that level of action, but it just didn't look nearly as clean.
I'm not sure if I agree with that entirely. I mean, like I said, some of these fights do take place in some dark and gritty confined spaces. So it's not nearly as shiny,
right,
you know, or as sunlit and pretty as the Transformers movies go. But you know, when I could see them well enough in their environments, I thought their movement, the physicality, the fighting worked really well for me. But like I said, I'm to me, this is more of a prelude to hopefully something even better down the road.
I hope you're right. I just think that the movie would have been better served to be all CGI instead of the mixture of CGI and action.
I got the whole CGI last time when they did TMNT back in 2007, and it looked fine.
Overall, I felt distracted by the real world versus what was obviously CGI to me. Mm-hmm. Oh, and one other thing that bugged me, Shredder, who is obviously an iconic villain from the comics and in the TV series, too much, man. Like, to me, Shredder was always a less is more villain. He was strong and that kind of thing, but he was just a simple mask and claws coming out of his hands.
That's what the movie was.
It was these
retractable... he was almost like a cyborg with all these... I completely agree with you there. I mean, to me, that's the kind of suit maybe you bring into the second film.
Right.
In the first one, he should have been a bit more pared down to, you know, what he's more similar in the previous films in the cartoon. So, yeah, Shredder was probably the only character that I really just didn't flow with. And I think most of that had to do with that outfit. It just didn't work. I do have to say, though, real quick before I totally forget, Tony Shalhoub's Splinter, I liked.
I didn't.
I liked his voice. I didn't like his look. His design was awful. His design
almost looked like a suit.
It was awful. I thought it was hideous.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. No.
It's but a movie I liked, and I did like the CGI turtles, but Splinter was the one thing I'm like, God damn! I kept looking for rats underneath me. It was creepy.
He looked plastic.
Yep.
To me, and yeah, he did. He looked. He like was a little distracting compared to the others, but Tony Shalhoub. What I'm glad is that they didn't go with a Mr. Miyagi kind of voice,
right?
Or some kind of very Asian voice. Given the creation of these characters, that's not how he would have developed his voice. So they stuck with Tony Shalhoub, who gave it a little more of a New York feel, and I like that. But overall, Scott, $1 out of $10, how much would you pay to go see this?
I'm going to get a lot of flack for it, but I gave it a $4.50. This movie.
Why are you going to get a flack, man? All the critics savaged it, so.
Well, but I'm getting lamb blasted for not loving it on social media, so. I don't know, man. The movie just made me second guess my love for the TV series as a kid.
If you didn't like it, you didn't like it.
Right.
It's fine.
I won't go as far as to say it ruined my childhood like the Indiana Jones movie did for you, but it just wasn't what I wanted from a live action Turtles flick. What did you want? I don't think I wanted a live action. I think I wanted that good of CGI, that more realistic than the one Justin was talking about before, but all CGI. The storyline didn't work for me, and I liked Will Arnett. I thought the rest of the acting was groan-worthy on multiple occasions, so I wasn't a huge fan, but I did laugh a couple times.
I enjoyed it. I laughed several times. It so easily, for me, could have gone so many shades of wrong, but it didn't. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say that I loved it, but I certainly did not dislike it or hate it. I kind of land around the... Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. And in this case, that's actually kind of praiseworthy. So I'd give it a solid 7.
I liked it. It was fun. I don't see anything different from the cartoons or the other movies at all. So I don't get that criticism from people. So I don't know if just diehards wanted something. I don't know what people wanted, but it's exactly as I remember it. And to each their own. If you didn't like it, you didn't like it. It really doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form. I just thought it was okay. 6 out of 10 for me. Into the Storm. Brian and I went and saw that. That's the twister for people without a budget. It's about a couple storm trackers that are trying to, or several storm trackers that are trying to hunt down a major storm so they don't lose all their funding. And they're tracking it down the same day that Gary and his kids are having the graduation ceremony for their school. His kids are videotaping the ceremony. Of course, all hell breaks loose. Gary gets separated from one of his sons, Donnie, and he has to hunt him down. And then the rest of the film is him with Trey and the trackers trying to find his son. Brian, for what story there is, what did you think about it?
Kind of like what you implied. There's just enough story to get you from one cool scene to the other. I really didn't get too emotionally connected to many of the characters. There was one scene where I got a little nervous, but I did not feel that connected with many of them. The acting wasn't bad. It's just, it missed a soul or something, some heart, or it just, like I said, it just kind of felt like they were just enough story to kind of get you from one destructive scene to the next.
Exactly. I did not think there was a... And people say, well, Twister didn't have a story. Maybe it didn't have a story, but the cast I thought was engaging. And we'll get to the special effects last, but the characters involved were a joke. I think Bill Paxton, the Extreme, was so much better than Richard Armitage, who plays Gary. And he's also the guy that's in The Hobbit. I mean, he's... Thorin, what is his name, Justin? I can't say his name.
Thorin Oakenshield.
Oakenshield, yeah. He's him in The Hobbit. I think he's very good in The Hobbit. Man, he sucks here. He's just so boring and bland, and he's wearing a sports coat through the whole thing. I mean, a tornado's fucking landing every 15 seconds, and you're wearing a sports coat. This makes no sense. Sarah Wayne Callies is in this. She plays Allison. She's one of the storm chasers.
She was Laurie from The Walking Dead.
Exactly. She was Laurie from The Walking Dead. She smiles, which I didn't see her do at all in The Walking Dead, so that was cool.
She's cleaner.
She's much cleaner. Yep. And she does fine. Everybody else kind of sucks. There really wasn't a whole lot of acting talent. And because of the story being so weak, that makes the movie suffer. If you don't have characters that are engaging, like, I mean, Twister had Philip Seymour Hoffman. You know, it had the Storm Chasers. You like these guys. Even if this, there wasn't really a story, it was just special effect to special effect. You liked the characters. You wanted to follow them. They're fun to watch. Not so much here. I really didn't have anybody that I wanted to follow.
Mm-mm, me either.
What about the... now, this movie's really based about production. It's really about what did you think of the storms? What did you think about special effects? And this movie, before we get there, this movie did an interesting thing where it actually incorporates found footage elements in a way that I think more movies should do. If you're going to do found footage, I like this way to do it, which is, and we've talked about this before, that, you know, you shoot it traditionally, and the only time you use found footage is when it would actually apply, like someone is actually filming it,
right,
instead of, oh shit, the tornado's on my head, I'm still going to film it, because that never makes sense. You know, in those moments, it breaks back and you don't see, you see the whole storm. Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, did you like that, Brian? Did that at least bring something original into the movie?
I use Cloverfield as an example because it's, as far as I'm concerned, probably one of the worst uses of found footage. And it's just somebody running with a video camera. And that shaky cam stuff is horrible. For me personally, I hate it with a passion. So for this to go from static stationary cameras, and then you'll see occasionally somebody's view from their camera that they're maybe they have on their phone or a GoPro camera, whatever the case, whatever is being used, then, you know, that's fine. And they set all those cameras up. They even tell you, like, the one vehicle they've got has got like 24 different cameras on it. So mm-hmm. you just assume the view is from one of those many, many cameras that's just on that one truck. So
that's a clever setup because it gives you the opportunity to realistically have a camera in the middle of the tornado. Hmm. Whereas you don't have the soup cans flying around like in Twister. That was the one part where I was like, what? Whatever. What did you think about the actual tornado footage? I thought the tornado scenes themselves were pretty intense. I loved the Fire-Nado.
The Fire-Nado was awesome.
That looked so cool in the trailer.
It was really cool. I looked because I wanted to know, because I didn't want to admit that I thought that thing was really cool if there's absolutely no chance that such a thing exists. They actually have captured a tornado on film that does that. So it can be done. So therefore, it's okay to be cool. That's my logic.
That is awesome.
It's not okay to be cool if you can't do it.
Exactly. Because then it's just, well, that's ridiculous. It's like the giant snake in
it's like a Sharknado.
Exactly. That would have been awesome, too, if a shark just flew out of the middle of the movie.
What if they had a shark Fire-Nado? The sharks.
Oh, my God. My mind just
exploded.
What if
the Sharknado fought the Fire-Nado?
Just eating wind left and right. I like it. So what was your final verdict? I mean, you like the scenes. You like the tornado scenes.
Yeah, it's an entertaining movie that I think you should watch it just for one reason, and that's the cool weather effects. Just don't expect a whole lot more. I just went in there kind of expecting basically what I got. I did enjoy it, though. $6.50 out of 10.
I thought tornado scenes are great. I actually had fun. Last week we talked about Poppy Field movies, those movies you turn the channel and you can't stop yourself from watching. This is going to be one of those because yeah. I liked every tornado scene. I thought, man, that is kick ass. And then people started talking and I'm like, shit, people are talking again. And these people suck at saying stuff. So that lost me every time that happened. There is not a person I cared about in this entire movie. You could have sucked them all up and I wouldn't have cared at all. But I did like the tornado scene. So if $10 full price, I give it $5.
Can I mention this and you can cut it out if you need to?
Sure.
But there's a scene where there's a couple of people trapped in an area with some debris over them and all that stuff. You know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. right? And all I kept, this was very distracting to me because there is a opening in the background that I kept thinking, all I thought the whole time they were in there is that, oh my God, that looks big enough to get through. I don't see anything blocking your way. Why don't you go there and just crawl out?
Because it's one of those movies where they don't need reasons. It just doesn't make sense.
I know, but you could have just put another brick or something up there, or a couple of bricks, and just blocked it out, and it would have been darker and wouldn't have been as distracting.
Brian, this is a movie that people are literally standing next to a tornado, and their coat just blows. Their cell phones are apparently waterproof. There's just no real logic here. You just have to swallow it for what it is and let it go.
Well, I didn't realize, you know, tornadoes just wiped out every cell phone service in the world around you.
No, he said waterproof.
I mean, I know they've knocked down towers and stuff. Don't get me wrong, but come on.
Yeah, just let it go, man.
Did you see the cow, though? Did you see the cow?
No, I didn't.
Was there a cow?
Was there a cow? Second cow?
What? There is a cow. There is a cow.
Did not see the cow. Now I got to go pay to see it again. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to see it again. Justin, you saw At the Devil's Door. What is that?
Well, it's a horror movie that's written and directed by Nicholas McCarthy. I saw it on iTunes. They've got it available. It is... Horror movies have really been hit or miss with me lately. Even something with as much money put behind it as Deliver Us from Evil ended up not really doing much for me. But I got to say, this one, while not terrifying from beginning to end, it had some ideas at play that I really liked, and it did have some imagery that was definitely chilling, as well as a few halfway decent scares. Now, the synopsis is that when an ambitious young real estate agent is asked to sell a house with a checkered past, she crosses paths with a disturbed girl whom she learns is a runaway daughter of the couple selling the property. When she tries to intervene and help the girl, she becomes entangled with a supernatural force that soon puts her artistic sister into its web and has sinister plans for both of them. The only real actress of note in this is Naya Rivera. She plays a role in Glee. Beautiful girl, and in this film, she's really reserved. She plays quite a kind of a character that just, even though it's like she's constantly kind of given shadow. She's just a kind of a negative, self-effacing person. But what's weird is that when the movie starts, let me put it this way. The movie jumps around a bit time-wise. And so it was hard for me at first to figure out, okay, whose movie is this? Because when you open it, there's a young actress who you think, okay, the movie's about her. But then another actress comes along, and you're like, okay, no, this is her story. But then her story ends, and all of a sudden, Naya Rivera's character becomes the central character. And so there's really no one person that you're kind of rooting for or following the whole way through. So it's not your traditionally edited or arranged movie. It does jump around a bit, but it tries for something more artistic. It tries for something a little more off center than a lot of horror films do these days. And for that, I have to give it props. On the whole, I enjoyed it more than I have, I think, any other horror movie so far this year.
Wow.
And 1 out of 10, I'd definitely give it a good $7.50.
You liked it more than The Turtles?
In its own way, I think because I'm a horror guy. And I mean, when I give a 7 to The Turtles, that's my inner 12-year-old giving that a 7.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm talking about this film, this is the adult Justin giving a 7.5.
Where is the adult? I don't know if I've met him. Is he nice?
He's all right. He's a bit of a dick. So I think you have met him.
So he's like the young Justin.
He's kind of
like the
young.
Did you leave him at home when you went? Did you leave him at home when you went and bought those dolls this weekend?
They're action figures, fuck stick. it's a good movie though. I enjoyed it.
I'm not gonna full on review it, but David.
You're on iTunes, go see it.
David McGrath has asked me several times to watch a movie called Jodorowsky's Dune.
That's why he asked you to see it.
So I could fuck his name up. Damn you, David. But it's basically talking about how director Jodorowsky did he was contemplating making the movie Dune, you know, based on the book, for years. He had a huge plan. He had tons of creative talent involved. And then it was scrapped at the last minute. And the documentary is telling his story and the behind the scenes. And, you know, you've got a lot of Dan O'Bannon is behind the scenes, Geiger's behind the scenes. You've got a lot of great talents behind the scenes in this documentary. It's a wonderful movie to watch to understand like the behind the scenes of filmmaking and how quickly it can fall apart and how this could have been an interesting film. I completely see why they didn't make it because this guy's batshit crazy, but he is extremely passionate. So it's kind of one of those things where I enjoy watching him, but I don't want to hang out with him for any length of time. It's one of those things. But it's an interesting movie. And if you're into documentaries about the filmmaking process, I definitely recommend it. It's something you want to check out. Scott?
Is his movie, if it would have been made, would it have rivaled Flash Gordon for just all out what the fuckness?
Well, a lot of people mentioned that it would rival 2001. Now, I don't know because I've seen his work and his work is out there. I think it would probably be closer to Flash Gordon than 2001, my personal opinion. But you've got a lot of people that are more talented than I am saying that it would have been better than that. So I gotta wonder what it would have been. What it would have been. But you will be interested to know that a lot of the designs have popped up in other films, like Alien. It was a huge influence on Alien.
Oh, yeah, because Dan O'Bannon wrote Alien.
And Geiger did the designs.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of that stuff played out in later years. So it's very interesting, especially for people that love movies, which if you're listening, most likely you do. Let's go to Blu-ray and video on demand releases, Scott.
Yeah, we're going to do something a little bit different this week. Instead of just doing Blu-ray and DVD like we usually do, we're going to add on the video on demand that is listed as well, because that's becoming the go-to for independent films, and we're seeing lots more going that route. So we'll start with Blu-ray and DVD. First up is The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Peter Parker runs the gauntlet as a mysterious company, Oscorp, sends up a slew of supervillains against him, impacting his life. I'm pretty sure we all saw this one, although I could not find a review score for Justin, but I gave it a 750, Brian gave it a 650, and Aaron gave it a 6. That was on episode 141.
And I was being generous. Now, Justin, did you ever actually see it?
Yeah, okay. I saw it in theaters. I thought I reviewed it with you guys, but even if I didn't, it would have got a 6.5. This was Spider-Meh.
Yep.
Man, I like that one better than you guys, apparently.
You sure did, and I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. That's how you know it got it wrong.
Well, I'm a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, and they got it wrong.
The villains were fine. It was Spider-Man and the Peter Parker moments that kind of left me wanting.
The villains were not fine, but go ahead, Scott.
And the parents.
Yeah. And the parents. Stupid parents.
Well, who apparently are his dad in the next movie? Is that not the rumor?
I don't know, but his dad is James Bond, apparently, because he's having a giant ripped-off airplane fight scene. I don't know what the hell is going on in that movie. It wasn't Spider-Man. Yeah,
and wasn't there like a scene that was cut out where he talks to his dad at the end of the movie or something like that?
Yeah, well, I guess that's not a spoiler because I didn't have it, right? Go ahead, Scott.
Next up is The Quiet Ones. A university professor and a team of students conduct an experiment on a young woman, uncovering terrifyingly dark, unexpected forces in the process. None of us saw that one, but that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's on iTunes right now. I think I'm going to give that a watch probably tonight.
Cool. Let me know how that is. And lastly, on Blu-ray and DVD, we've got Only Lovers Left Alive. A depressed musician reunites with his lover through their romance, which has already endured several centuries. It's disrupted by the arrival of uncontrollable younger sister. It stars Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston. So.
Mm-hmm. They are vampires. Spoiler alert.
Well,
they're vampires.
That's why it was several centuries. I kind of figured there was something supernatural going on.
Maybe
there.
They just, I mean, look at Tom Hiddleston. He could probably, I think he is 200 years old. He's just fantastic.
Apparently, Tom Hiddleston is Katy Perry.
Yeah.
Hiddleston. Hiddleston. You put an M in there.
I thought I wrote it down wrong for a second.
Oh, okay. So you're correcting.
How does that make you feel when Aaron corrects you?
We've also got two video-on-demand films. The first is The Zero Theorem, which actually will be released on the 19th of August. This is the Terry Gilliam film starring Christoph Waltz, a computer hacker whose goal is to discover the reason for human existence, continually finds his work interrupted thanks to the management.
That's the one you really want to see.
I do. It looks really interesting. But I kind of like Terry Gilliam stuff, too. So, namely, they send a teenager and lusty love interest to distract him. The second one is a documentary called To Be Takei. Is it Takei or Takei? Takei? George Takei. To Be Takei comes out on August
20th. Sulu. Just say To Be Sulu.
Well, that's, yeah. It's a documentary about the famed actor who played Sulu on the original Star Trek. And
oh, my.
I've heard good things about that one, but I haven't had a chance to
see
it.
I'd love to see. I want to see his life story.
He's such a funny guy, too.
He's such an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. Not just funny, he's interesting.
He's like my favorite social media person to pay attention to, because his everything he does is hilarious.
That's true. That's true.
With that, we'll move on to our trivia slash ho game, which we're going to alternate every week. This week, we're going to do recasting the classics. One of our listeners, which listener was that, Aaron? I can't remember.
Joe Montemuro?
Joe Montemuro wrote in requesting us a long time ago to recast the movie Hook, which is the Peter Pan film from 1990-something. I forgot to look what the year was.
And before you go on, I do want to say Joe was a very classy move. We had already planned on doing it this week. We had talked about it last week. And he actually wrote an email and said, hey, guys, appreciate that you're going to do it this week, but don't be beholden to that. If you prefer not to do it because of, you know, Robin Williams passing, then feel free. But I thought we already planned for it. It seems more fate than anything. So we're just going to go ahead.
Okay, so what we're going to do, we've kind of each been assigned one of the characters in the movie to recast. So Justin's going to recast Captain Hook. I'm going to recast Tinkerbell. Brian's going to recast Smee. And then all three of us are actually all four of us are going to give our pick to play Peter Banning or, you know, Peter Pan. So let's start with Justin. Who'd you pick for Captain Hook?
I went with Clive Owen for this one. I think you put the right mustache and that hat on him, and I think he could be just as dastardly a Captain Hook as Dustin Hoffman was when he played it. There were a lot of ways I could have gone, but I like Clive Owen, and I want to see him in a movie that I would enjoy, and it seems like a long time since he's done that.
I like that. He needs to do more stuff.
I was given the task of recasting Tinkerbell, and I went with Kaylee Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory. I thought she would be a young...
I like her. She's adorable.
She is, and she was... I could see her playing
with that. With a really short outfit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're making it dirty.
Yeah.
Brian is creeping me out.
Brian, who'd you pick for Smee?
I picked Toby Jones. He's
from the Harry
Potter.
He
was in Captain America. He's the co-host with
The Hunger Games.
Stanley Tucci on The Hunger Games. Yeah.
Good call.
Oh, okay. He played. God Almighty!
You see him? Yeah, he's like, oh, that guy. You know, he's you see him in a lot of stuff.
Was he in Harry Potter?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Was he? No idea.
Yep.
Don't know. Yes.
At least, yeah. Yes, he was.
There you go. Yes. Good call, Scott. I have no idea.
I'm going to look it up now.
Yeah, I don't care.
And then lastly...
Harry Potter, yep.
Lastly...
I'm looking at IMDb. He was in it, so...
Who did he play?
Who cares? Shit. Keep going, Scott. Just keep going. Ignore them.
Oh, he was the voice of Dobby.
This is why we go along so often.
I can see that.
Now you can see it because of his voice?
Yeah, because he has a very peculiar kind of voice.
You're so fucktarded. Go ahead.
Lastly, we're going to all four of us recast Peter
what
Pan.
What was that movie he was in?
Are you just refusing to let him talk? Or
yeah, what? I am.
Please, Scott.
I'll start. I went with Jimmy Fallon. I think he's a man boy, and I think he'd be a great Peter Pan.
Interesting.
Justin.
Ballsy.
I went with Jason Bateman. To me, he's got a bit of Robin Williams quality to him. And whenever when I pictured that character in my head and I pictured Jason Bateman, it seemed like just the perfect match.
All right, Aaron, what about you? Who'd you pick?
I picked Matt Damon. I think Matt Damon is one of the strongest actors out there, and I think he can play pretty much anything. And I love when he plays an innocent, wide-eyed kind of kid. He just has that knack to play a deeply emotional guy, a tortured guy, as well as someone who's just free.
I just can't picture him in green tights.
I'm sorry, but he's a very good actor who can play just about anything. He doesn't get enough credit, but he can.
Now, when he beats Captain Hook, does he go, "How you like them apples?"
Applesauce, bitch. Brian?
Oh, okay. I thought y'all were still running around. So anyway, I went with somebody, I guess probably about the same age range. Jake Gyllenhaal.
All right.
Okay.
So he's done a wide range of stuff, and I'd like to see him do something with a little bit of humor. Everything he seems to do lately has kind of been a little dark, so it'd be a little bit of different twist.
Brokeback Peter Pan.
Man, that sounds like a pick that took a long time to come to.
More
it
Bubble
took me
Boy.
A while.
Probably weeks.
I'm not gonna lie.
Weeks, I'm guessing.
A couple weeks at least.
Thanks, Joe. I hope that makes the movie that you wanted to see, one of those anyway. Let us know who was your favorite of our Peter Pan. I'm curious what you thought. Now let's go to From the Outside In. That's a topic that we talk about each week. It's on ours, our listeners' minds. We have talked ad nauseum. We've been called on it a couple times. We've talked about some shows way too much. Game of Thrones, Sons of Anarchy, 24, that's my fault, Walking Dead.
Several. We made a whole fucking podcast out of that.
Sure, because that's that good a show. But what about those shows that rarely or never get mentioned? On this week's topic, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about 12 other shows that are still on the air that we watch, but we just don't talk about. Hopefully, they're not really water cooler shows, which means, you know, nobody's really talking about them over and over. But we thought, hey, we would share some of our favorite shows, even if you don't know that we watch them. So here are our top three shows that we think you guys should check out whenever it is that you have a chance. So we're going to go around robin. And Scott, why don't you go first?
My show is actually one of my wife's favorite show. It's called Parenthood. It's on NBC. It's a show that's it's very much a drama. It's about several different families that are all struggling with something to do with raising kids, and it's an incredibly emotional show. And I secretly like the show. I kind of make fun of my wife for watching it, because every time I walk in the room and it's on, there's just always something like cry worthy happening in the show. It just seems like a super depressing show, but it's actually really well done. Some interesting characters and some interesting performances. Like Ray Romano's in it. And he plays a totally serious character.
I've never seen the show.
It's worth it. It's actually like on the sixth season starts next month. So it's still going strong.
Is it really six seasons?
Yeah.
Wow.
So okay. That was my number three pick.
Justin?
You know, reality TV gets a lot of well-earned flack. But there is one show that I thoroughly enjoy, and it's one of the reality competition shows, and it's The Amazing Race.
Oh, that is so good.
It seems like every year it gets the Emmy win, but yet nobody ever talks about it. It's either Survivor or Big Brother or
whatever.
And it
was almost canceled a couple of years ago, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but The Amazing Race is one of the few reality shows where I feel like the people that win really earned it, because they worked hard, they persevered through some really atrocious and dangerous stuff. And I just thoroughly enjoy watching it every single season. It really never disappoints. And I wish it was more than just the Emmys talking about it.
I do too. I've heard nothing but great things about that show. I only watched it one season, but it was a very cool concept that they do very well.
They just need to cross over with Naked and Afraid. So you're naked racing.
Lord have mercy, man.
This is a show on VH1 where they're dating naked now.
Hello.
Yeah. I don't see the point if it's on VH1. HBO, I'll watch it. I'm not watching it on VH1. Brian, what's your number three?
I'm actually sticking with the same channel and just a different show, but Big Brother.
Really?
I can't, love this.
Can't picture Brian watching Big Brother with popcorn in his lap.
It's addicting. You get to hating these people because they're just assholes, and then you're next thing you know you're rooting for them because somebody else. There's so much. What it is they've got, I think it's 16 people. They cram them into a house, cut them off from any outside influences, allegedly, any information at all. They don't know what's going on in the news and entertainment, nothing. And they have a competition, and whoever wins gets their own little room, and they have to nominate a couple of people, and then they get a chance to come off the block, so they say, and eventually somebody goes home every week. And there is so much sneaky stuff, and it's just watching somebody just lie to the other and then double cross them, and then they'll go right back to that person and talk sweet to them, and then they do it all over again. It's just it's so much fun. So much fun. It's definitely a guilty pleasure. I'm not very proud that I like this show.
You sound proud. I don't know. You seem pretty proud.
I do like it.
That sounds like junior high.
That's why Brian likes it. He's like, I'm reliving high school days. And I keep getting older, and they just stay the same age.
And you went there, didn't you?
I sure did. That's on CBS as well, you said?
Yeah, it is on CBS, and it actually comes on like three times a week. So,
do you watch
is
all of
Julie
them?
Is Julie Chen still hosting that show?
She still hosts. Yep, she still is. And
oh my God.
Yeah, it comes on every summer, so it's not like Survivor that comes on twice a year, which is also a good one. But they, it's three times a week. Yeah.
Do you watch all of them, or do you DVR?
I sure do.
Wow, this I did not know about you. I'm finding out all kinds of things, you creepy stalker. You just like to watch people, and they don't know you're watching. My number three is Longmire. It's a, I think I might have mentioned it once before, but it's an A&E show, and it's also available on Netflix. I think the first two seasons are available on Netflix. Walt Longmire is a Wyoming sheriff who recently lost his wife to a random murder, or he thinks it's a random murder. And essentially what the show is, it's the murder mystery of the week kind of show, but there are serialized storylines to each season which run throughout. It is very much a Western. I mean, it's a modern day Western. He's an old cowboy. He's an old guard. And Robert Taylor is the guy that plays Walt. And he's so good at this character. He reminds me of watching, like the old Western stars, like John Wayne and those guys, you know, the quiet heroes that they didn't have time.
He's very Clint Eastwoodish.
Yeah. Clint Eastwood. There you go. He's very quiet, grits his teeth. He doesn't say much. And if he does say something, you better damn well pay attention to him. You know, he's just that kind of no-nonsense guy. He's not very emotional. He doesn't wear his heart on his sleeve.
Isn't the actor Australian?
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Robert Taylor.
When you say modern Western, I immediately think like Justified. Is it that modern, or is it
kind of? It's kind of like he's Clint Eastwood from 1965 in a modern Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay,
it's a more dusty kind of Western than Justified.
Yeah, it's much more out on the range.
Okay,
Indian. The Indian culture, really Native American culture, I'm sorry, plays a big part of the show. Lou Diamond Phillips is here as his friend Henry. Katie Sackhoff's part of the show. It's just such a fun, good show. I just love it. I absolutely love it. Scott, what's your number two?
My number two is actually an anime series that I picked up recently. I think we talked about it a little bit, and I know I've mentioned it with a couple people on our Facebook page, but Attack on Titan.
Ugh. Wow, he didn't. Ugh, your shitty show. So just let him talk.
Oh, take a shot.
Go ahead.
Anybody out there drinking?
So wanted to like this show.
Well, and to be fair, I was recommended this show and I watched it and I got the first episode got me totally hooked.
To be fair, man, if you liked it, you liked it.
I do love it.
You own that shit.
No, I'm owning it. That's what I'm trying to explain. Well, let me tell you the story. The story is basically this group of people that have walled themselves off in a city to keep themselves protected from these titans, which are basically gigantic creatures. There's a couple different kinds, but the scary one is this one that basically has no skin. It's just all you see is muscles and tendons, and it looks like they're smiling almost because they're really freaky looking. The lower level ones are basically completely naked, but they don't have any genitalia, and they're mindless. And all they want to do is feed on human flesh and not even for sustenance. It's just they're for whatever reason programmed to do it and you don't know why.
Wow, cartoons have changed since I was a kid.
It's messed up and the first episode is gruesome.
That ain't Thundercats.
Yeah. It does take a little while to get going, so if you do want to check it out, give it till about episode 7 or 8 before you give up on it because it is a little slow. And these episodes are like 20 minutes long, so they're not. It's not like a long.
I was gonna say I gave up on it like minute 7.
I did too, bro.
Did you really?
I tried. I wanted to like it.
Well, it is. It's subtitled and it's got a little bit of Japanese flavor to it. It's definitely a different culture. But I'm telling you, the story gets really interesting, and when you finally figure out what they're actually where they're going with it, it's quality, and it has a pretty interesting finish, and there is going to be a second season. Now, this is being a Japanese animation; it doesn't air on any of the major networks, but there is a network called Toonami or Toonami.
Oh, yeah, it's semi speed dial. Yep. No,
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
But the whole first season is on Netflix instant streaming, and you can watch it there. And I know a couple of the guys that listen to us and chat on Facebook thoroughly enjoyed it, so I recommend it.
Very cool, Justin. What's your number two?
My second one is legit. Now, a lot of people recently, comedians have been getting their own shows. Mark Maron has one. Louis C.K. has Louis. But as much as I like Louis, I think Jim Jeffries' show Legit is much more funny. But I think the reason for that is he doesn't go for that sour kind of downbeat humor that Louis C.K. does. Jim Jeffries is a Australian comedian who really, for me, is one of the funniest comedians working today. And if you've got Netflix, go check out his one of his comedy specials called Fully Functional. If you're not just in tears laughing, I don't even want to know you by the end of it. But this stars Jim Jeffries and DJ Qualls and Dan Bacadal. It's a little bit autobiographical, but it's a lot not. And if you can't, in the second episode, they take a quadriplegic man to a whorehouse for the best night of his life. If you don't like that kind of humor, don't watch it, but it's hysterical. And Jim Jeffries, I hope he gets just bigger and bigger and bigger career, because he's a hysterical human being.
I need to see the show immediately.
Unfortunately, it's on FXX now, and my DirecTV package doesn't get FXX, so I haven't been able to see the second season. I'm going to have to wait till it hits Netflix, but the first season is available on Netflix and some streaming as well. So if you've got it, go check it out. I highly, highly recommend it.
What's it called again?
Legit, L-E-G-I-T.
Brian, what's your number two?
My number two is a show on TNT, and it's a show that I'm actually surprised I stuck with, but I'm kind of glad I did, and that's Falling Skies.
Okay. All right.
The Noah Wiley alien invasion show. Basically, it's aliens attack Earth, and there ain't a whole lot of Earthlings left. And I believe it's the fourth season is on right now. It's just good to see some science fiction that's actually kind of, for my two cents, done well. You see, you know, this dad who's, you know, his kids are kind of, he's trying to find his children. He's got, you know, three kids. He's a widow. You know, he's trying to teach these, and he's kind of reluctantly become the leader of this little band of people. And it's just kind of grown bigger. And of course they've got different trials and tribulations they go through, and they're trying to get to more populated areas, but also trying to fight these aliens and stuff. So it's one of those where they've done a pretty good job of continuing what is really kind of a very thin story.
All right. My number two is Suits. I love Suits. It follows Harvey Specter. He's a hotshot attorney who ends up falsifying a license for Mike Ross, who's basically was a pot dealer. Harvey Specter finds out that he's an absolute genius, so he wants him to come work for him, falsifies his credentials so he can become a lawyer. It's an absolutely ridiculous premise. We all know it wouldn't happen. But I love watching these two spar. Some of the cases they handle are actually pretty riveting. Gabriel Mott and Patrick J. Adams are the two leads. They've had tons of guest stars. I mean, every guest star I could think of. You've had Gary Cole's been on here. You've had, Catelyn Stark from Game of Thrones has been on here. It's just a fun show. It's on USA. It's not trying to be anything more than it is. It's just a fun show. And there is a serialized structure. The season does continue. But really, you get most of it at the end of every episode, and I'm okay with that once in a while.
I was just going to say that because I actually saw one episode of that show on a plane when I was flying somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was right in the middle of the season, and knowing just what you said about it, you can watch almost any I watched that episode completely independent and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Wasn't it fun?
It's a
really fun, clever, witty show.
Witty is, yeah, exactly.
Is this another one of those USA shows?
Mm-hmm.
Like Psych USA?
It sure was.
Okay.
Last of 8 seasons. 8 wonderful seasons. I believe they're all on Netflix. You should catch up when you're done watching shitty reality shows and whatnot. And Scotty, what's your number one?
My number one is a show that a lot of you are probably familiar with. It's called The League. It is a
hilarious show.
This pretty much goes in line with Justin's Legit. This is some of the most wrong humor, but at a more sophomoric level than dark, I think.
I think it's written by 12-year-olds.
It feels like in a lot of instances. It's what's cool is it's kind of an ad lib comedy. At least the first season, they basically gave it a semi structure, a basic storyline, and then they just kind of made up the script as they went along. It's a story about a bunch of guys that are all close friends, and they're in a recurring fantasy football league with each other. And it is raunchy as hell, and just some of the stuff they come up with is so funny. Just they take this fantasy football league so seriously. It's hilarious. There's a trophy for whoever is in last place called the Sacco, which is like basically like a giant bull scrotum attached to a trophy. That's the kind of humor that you're getting on this. It does air on FXX now. They did change it. The first four seasons though are available for streaming on Netflix, and the new season starts on September 3rd. So
I love that show. That is so funny.
And I had to convince you forever to watch it too.
Because I don't like dick and fart jokes, and that's all that show is. But for some reason, I like it. It's so bad that it's good.
I think if they could get rid of the guy who plays Taco.
Oh, I love Taco.
I would thoroughly love it. Taco's great. I hate that fucking character.
I love Taco. Taco's great. He is
the dumbest character I think I've ever seen.
He's so funny.
Look, but everybody else off the waiver is fantastic.
Oh, he's so funny. You are mistaken. Justin, what's your number one?
Supernatural. I've talked about it a lot, but it seems like it's one of those shows that, especially now that it's entering its 10th season coming up, it's been around forever, but it's never gotten the media attention or audience attention that I feel like it should. I mean, a lot of people watch it because it's still on, but nobody talks about it. And I don't know why that is.
Well, it's been on for 10 years, man. They're all talked out.
I guess so. I mean, Eric Kripke created the show, and for the first five seasons, he had a pretty tight idea of what story he was going to tell. And through those five seasons, while there were, of course, Monster of the Week episodes, for the most part, they were following the hunting down of this demon that killed their mother and led them all to becoming hunters. Once the fifth season ended, Eric Kripke left, and then different people came in to run the show. And it's not been as good as it was those first five seasons. But even so, Jared Padalecki and Jansen Ackles, who play the two lead brothers in it, are so good, so charismatic, and so compelling that they can make watching even average stories compelling. It is still a very, very, very good show. And if you like supernatural-type stories and you haven't seen it, check it out. It is on Netflix, so you can see all nine seasons.
Yeah, it's a lot of TV to take in at once.
It is a lot.
You're much better off watching Psych. Brian, what's your number one?
Fuck you.
That's what you get for shitting on Scott.
And that shit show.
I've never seen.
I was going to say, have you ever seen Psych? Yeah.
Fuck no.
I watched the first season.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Brian, what's your number one pick?
My number one is on HBO. We mentioned it a few weeks back. But it's a little bit more of an update now that we're about five or six, maybe seven episodes into it. It's called The Leftovers.
Oh, you're really getting into that one, huh?
Yeah, it's The Leftovers takes place 3 years after a global rapture, supposedly. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of what we're kind of led to believe right now, which basically caused the unexplainable disappearance of 2% of the world's population in it. And it kind of focuses not just on the ones that left. It really focuses on the people that were left behind. And the first episode is one of those that by the end of it, it's kind of like Game of Thrones. You're almost like, what the hell is going on? You know, there's just so much. They're introducing so many people and jumping from one thing to the other. But by the second one, it kind of starts, you see it starting to take shape. And then by the third or fourth one, the third one was a fantastic episode. It focuses mainly on Christopher Eccleston's character. And by that time, I was completely hooked. And now it's kind of, the last few episodes have kind of followed mainly one character. And they might touch a little bit on other stuff, but it's been mainly focused on one specific character. And now this week really wasn't much different, but there is a couple of moments that you're like, crap. Just as I start to figure this thing out, you know, you throw me another curveball here. So it's one of those, it's definitely gets you wondering what the heck's going on. So it's been a lot of fun. It's on HBO right now. So
yeah, I definitely want to check that out. That sounds very good.
Hmm.
My number one, and I have mentioned it once before, and that's Hell on Wheels. I never wanted to watch it. Brian told me I should watch it. I dig it. Apparently, he stopped watching it. Whatever. But or he's behind. But he told me I'd like it. He'd like it. I'm like, man, I don't want to watch it. It just looks dumb. It's not. It stars Anson Mount as Cullen Bohannon. He's a railroad. Working outlaw who's kind of forced to battle a bunch of shit heels like the Money Man and Durant, a sadistic railroad worker named the Swede. Rapper Common pops up as Elam. He's a free black man who happens to be in love with a white woman. It's a whole lot of a culmination of a melting pot of society back in, you know, the 1800s. I don't know why I love this show, but I can't stop watching it when it's on. It's a good old-fashioned Western, but it's brought up to date with a very serialized story. Anson Mount is just great as Cullen Bohannon. He's just so engaging to watch. The guy is just fun. You're just waiting for him to shoot anybody. And I actually enjoy it more than I did Deadwood. So if you like Westerns, I recommend it. It's on AMC. You can find it in the first three seasons on Netflix. I definitely recommend it. This new season's even, I mean, it started off better than the last couple. So I really like where it's going. Mm-hmm. Some of our listener picks. Josh Stima said The League. Look at that.
I got a friend.
Amy Hutchinson, Masters of Sex. I don't know anybody else that even watches it. I do not, but I do want to see it. I've heard good things. Mm-hmm. Not just because there's sex in the title.
But I already mastered it. Why do I need to watch a show?
That's funny. Stephen White, Chicago Fire, and its spinoff, Chicago PD. It's not reinventing the wheel, but it's entertaining, and I look forward to it every week. I've never actually seen the Chicago Fire show. I've heard a lot of good things. My buddy Dennis watches it every week. So there's something to it. Craig Schermerhorn, Castle. Yeah. Ryan and Esposito need a spinoff. I agree. Great show, slowly and quietly racking up season after season. If you don't know what Castle is, that's the Nathan Fillion show where he's a writer solving mysteries every week. It's really good. Steve Peterson, Haven. It's a sci-fi show very loosely based on Stephen King's mystery story, The Colorado Kid. Started off as a Monster of the Week show, but has grown increasingly more interesting with an overall arc reminiscent of Twin Peaks. It's also fun to catch all the King references sprinkled throughout. Have you watched it?
I've watched it, and Scotty, you might be interested. The woman who plays the lead in that show provided the voice and motion capture for Ellie in the Uncharted games.
Oh, okay.
Wow. That's some great picks, guys. We're going to get going so we can talk about Robin Williams, but remember to like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/The Hollywood Outsider. We have a Facebook group that a lot of people are having fun conversations on, so definitely check that out. There's a link in the show notes. And if you review us on iTunes, we will read your review on the show, like Joe Saxophone. His review of our show, the name says it all. This pod is just four regular dudes who love Michael Bay movies. And they don't apologize for it. Although you're making me feel a little guilty about it. It's a fun and entertaining couple of hours of empty calories. Really? Or empty calories? Not even a little filling? If I had one complaint, it would be that the games and trivia sections of the show kind of grind it to a halt for me. But other listeners seem to enjoy them, so whatever. Fun pod overall. Thanks, Joe, and I like your name, Joe Saxophone.
How many stars?
Five stars.
Five stars, yay.
Five stars. So apparently the trivia didn't suck too bad. Maybe it just means he got it wrong that week.
So you're not the ugliest guys in the room. That's kind of what it felt like.
And I do want to give a shout-out. I got a couple of tweets. Shout-out to Stephen Raj 21, who tweeted a picture of his Thursday routine, which involves working out and listening to The Hollywood Outsider. That's fantastic, because I don't work out, and I'm just glad. I'm picturing somebody getting all roided up listening to us.
Well, I don't know if I recommend people listening to us while lifting heavy weights.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you laugh and drop a
that ain't my fault, bro.
Bench press on your chest.
We're not held liable, I don't think, for that, right?
No, we're not good.
PS Gamer said he wanted to point out that The Hunger Games was really, because last week we talked about Batman versus Superman moving back a month. The Hunger Games was released on March 23rd and made $408 million in the U.S., so it should be fine.
Hmm.
Good point, sir. Way to call us bitches. Mr. Stima said, great episode and spoiler cast this week, fellas. Glad people love Guardians as much as I did. Everybody seems to dig it. And HC Flick Fans says, the turtles were still silly. I was worried that this edition would go too dark. It didn't happen. His kids rated it pancakes because they rated it on a kid scale. I think that's adorable. Aww. If you expected more than a kid's movie with a drizzle of grown-up stuff, you will hate this film. And he should have put comma Scott.
Just... Well, I wish I knew what the full range is. It like waffles, pancakes, muffins?
I'm sure it starts with grape nuts. It's got to. You know, that's maybe the bad one. That's bad. And then it goes
pancakes with syrup?
Do you like grape nuts?
It's not a delicious kid's treat.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Grape nuts is what you put out like on eating for
gravel.
Driveway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gravel. When you got to put tons of shit on it to make it delicious, it's not good.
I love grape nuts.
Justin, you got one email, and then we'll wrap it up.
I do. I got an email from Kristen Dew. She says, this week's clip is from The Prestige. In your Guardians of the Galaxy spoiler cast, you asked for feedback on whether we like the extra podcasts, and I certainly do. I hadn't even seen Guardians, and I honestly do not plan to. You should. But I really enjoyed listening to you all talk about your topics you are passionate about, such as comic books and sci-fi movies. It is always such a fun little surprise when my podcast feed pops up with an unexpected episode from y'all, so I say keep them coming. She says, Poppy Field, movie topic, my main two movies are Forrest Gump and Goodfellas, although Goodfellas is definitely one that I may make it through a commercial or two before I get so frustrated at all the edits and have to change the channel. My cheesy movies that I always get caught up in are Love and Basketball, and I don't even like basketball, and Easy A. She loves Emma Stone. Thanks, as always, for all you do. I'm a hoe for life, Kristen Dew.
Thank you, Kristen. Nice. We really appreciate that. Remember, stay through the rim shots because we're going to talk about Robin Williams for a few minutes. And go to our website, thehollywoodoutsider.com. I wrote I think it's a nice tribute to Robin on our site. You can read it there. Also, reviews for Expendables 3, which I saw, but I'm going to save the review for next week so Brian and I can talk about it. It's fun. It's fun. But we're also going to have a spoiler cast, so look for that. Justin, Brian, Scott, thanks for being here. Remember, guys, listen and subscribe on iTunes. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, all that other jive. Thanks for being here. And remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater, what do?
Buy popcorn.
There you go.
I've got it!
Oh, thank God!
Nurse!
Yes, doctor?
Call the anesthesiologist! This woman needs an enema!
An enema?
Enema?
Enema!
No, she needs a pedicure!
Pedicure?
This ain't no goddamn beauty parlor!
Epitaph!
Epitaph? She's not dead, you moron!
Epidermis? What is it, epilady?
Epidural, asshole!
That's right! Yes! That's what I mean.
Well, come
I mean
on,
an epidural.
Epidural!
I always get those confused. Enema, pedicure, epidermal. I should buy myself a clitoris.
All right, we are back. Now, obviously, Robin Williams did pass away. We're not going to go into what happened. That's for other websites and blogs. We're going to talk about the man that we loved and why we loved him. And I think, honestly, of all four of us, and we all have different feelings for him, but Justin, you did name an entire show basically off one of his works. So why don't you tell us what he means to you and why he means that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it relatively quick as I can. Robin Williams as a comedian, I always enjoyed, but I was never a huge fan. He's just so frenetic and just it's almost like watching walking cocaine when he was on that stage, just the speed with which he would zip through voice after voice, topic after topic. But when he did Dead Poets Society, it really did speak to me on a deep, deep emotional level. It was his performance as Mr. Keating, this new teacher at this all-boys school that tries to teach these kids that, you know, poetry isn't just something you read because you have to. There's more to it. There's life and love and truth in it. And one of my favorite scenes is when he pulls Ethan Hawke up to the front of the class. You know, Ethan didn't do the homework. He didn't bring a poem with him. And so Robin Williams pulls this really beautiful imagery and poem out of him. And as the camera kind of circles around and around, it's an amazing scene. It affected me deeply. I would not write today if it wasn't for that movie. I certainly wouldn't have created the Dead Robot Society without it, but I did, and I owe Robin Williams just a huge debt for doing that movie and inspiring me to be who I am today. And I freely admit I cried several times yesterday, and I honestly can't remember the last time a celebrity's death touched me this deeply, and it did. And I hope that if there is somewhere after this life, I hope he's at peace and he's found happiness there.
In fact, a lot of people, I gotta tell you, this is probably one of the most overwhelming show of support for a deceased actor I've seen in a long time. I have never, actually, I don't even know if I ever have seen this kind of support for someone that passed away. And, you know, just how many fans he had over, for various reasons, whether it be for his comedy or his drama, it just boggles my mind. Brian, what did you want to add?
Yeah, it's really just echoing those same sentiments. And I'm kind of glad in a way to say that you guys were as moved as I was, because I was actually pretty emotional about it myself. And, you know, and I got to, you know, doing the, just kind of looking through his movies and stuff. And I, it's weird because I'd look at those movies and I'm like, you know, there's some good movies here, but none of them really rank on my favorites list. But then I get to thinking about his performance, and it's just him. You always felt like you knew him. Mm-hmm. And it was a kick in the gut for sure. You know, hearing this news and everything, and he is such a comedic genius, and just everything I'm missing, you know, I'm going to miss his stand up. I love seeing him on the old, what was the HBO comedy thing? Comic Relief.
Comic Relief.
Oh, he was Crystal. And Whoopi Goldberg. And he was that was just some of the best stuff I've ever watched. And, you know, his serious stuff, there were some good performances in a few of his movies. And I just, it's just one of those things where you just kind of shake your head. You just look at the article over and over, and you start scouring the internet to find, you know, hey, is this legit or not? And you're praying it's not, but then obviously unfortunately it is. But you're right. This is almost like politician level of news coverage, support, mm-hmm. and people affected by this. And, you know, we're really, really going to miss his everything, not just his talent, but everything about him.
So. When I heard the news yesterday, as you guys probably did, just kind of sat stunned. It's one of those that you almost don't want to imagine a world without a guy like him in it. Mm-hmm. Not that we know him personally or that we're close with him, but I attribute a lot of the very little humor that I have to his performance in a lot of his movies. I sat down as I was thinking about it yesterday and thinking, man, I've probably seen him the most of any other actor in just movies in general, just because he's always in something and he's always in something interesting and sometimes goes out of the box. Mm-hmm. Which brings me up to my next point, which is when I discovered Dead Poets Society, it was at a time when I was starting to get an interest in seeing actors that normally were typecast in something else do something completely out of their normal range of acting. And Dead Poets Society was that for me. That's what attracted me to the movie, because I wanted to see this crazy funny guy mm-hmm. playing a serious role. And I wound up falling in love with it. It was my favorite movie for years and years. And much like Justin, I attribute that movie to who I am today, not as a writer, but I decided I wanted to become a teacher after seeing that movie. That was where I realized, man, I can be a teacher without being a stoic, uptight, you know.
You can be fun.
I can be fun. And mm-hmm. that's really what inspired me to kind of put a fire in my butt and go back to school and start that up. So I'm really bummed that he's gone, that I'm not going to be able to see another new movie with him. It's just a very, very depressing day yesterday.
I grew up with his comedy, and not the Mork and Mindy stuff. I mean, it was cute, but like Live at the Met, I don't know if it was technically before Eddie Murphy, but it was before I saw Eddie Murphy Delirious. So for me, that was the most foul humor I had seen on television to that date. because I hadn't seen George Carlin stuff yet. You know, it was just like the first foul-mouthed comedian I really learned to appreciate. My uncle, this is his favorite comedian of all time. So, I mean, he introduced me to him a long time ago. And I remember watching that, and I still will watch it. It's one of the few comedy specials I will go back and still laugh at all the jokes, and I put a couple on the Facebook. Like when he goes off about cocaine and alcoholism and all the stuff that, if you know his behind the scenes, that's he learned this because of, you know, pain.
Experience.
Most humor comes from pain. And the way that he delivers his humor was just – it's still mind-boggling to me. I mean, he was just like a freight train, and you couldn't – get him off the tracks. I mean, once he started going, he was, I mean, a ping pong ball and a freight train combination thing. I got tired watching him. And, you know, and I think some people thought, well, that's just a shtick or whatever. But then you see him on any talk show, that's what he was like. Now, I hear he was actually a quiet, reserved person one-on-one. I don't know. I know him from a public life. Mm-hmm. And his comedy was genius. And I used to think, I remember when I was younger, I thought, this is a one-note guy. This is all he's got. He's going to be that stand-up comedy. He's going to be like Sam Kinison or something. He's just going to be funny, and that's it. And then I saw movies like Dead Poets Society, Fisher King, all these movies, Good Morning Vietnam, which was perfect for him because it got to say, look, I'll do your funny bits. I'll play your game. But I'm also an extremely good actor, and I'm going to show you exactly what an extremely good actor can do. And he made a fully realized character who also got to throw in little Robin Williams bits, you know. And I think that was a genius transition on his part to become a better actor. And if you ever saw the James Lipton Inside of the Actor's Studio, he's the first two-hour special they ever did because he had such a wide range of body of work. And that never stopped. He never stopped being a guy that could do anything. And unfortunately, I don't think he ever really got the respect for that. You know, he kind of was always seen as the funny guy to a lot of people, even though he had so many talented roles and stuff. But I just absolutely loved him. He's just one of the few, him and Tom Hanks, I kind of put in this special category of actors that I've, even though you know they're acting, I always feel when I see them on screen that I know them. Like I know you, Robin. You know, I know, just like I know Tom Hanks, I know you, Robin. I feel like he's an everyman, and he's a perfect combination of heart and character that an everyman needs to have. So horrible tragedy for me too. Horrible tragedy. Any parting thoughts or what's your, any other favorite bits of Robin Williams, favorite roles besides the Poets Society?
Not a role, but his stand-up, HBO, the Live on Broadway. I don't think I've laughed harder at a stand-up.
Live at the Met. I think there's a couple of them. So.
The Broadway one, he has this bit about how golf was invented, where he's talking like an Irishman the whole time. Oh, man, I laughed so hard at that. Oh, so funny.
I remember seeing him in Popeye. When I was just a little kid, and to this day, it's one of the weirdest, quirkiest cartoon to live action adaptations I've ever seen. But somehow he makes that character work when it shouldn't.
My favorite comment about that movie, and I still remember this because it was so funny. He's like, if you watch Popeye backwards, it has a plot. Brian, what's your favorite role?
Maybe Aladdin.
Oh,
that was
good pick. Yeah.
It took my perception of him to a different level, and I guess the humor with it, it just fit. That was one of the first things that I thought about.
Well, it wasn't a great movie. One of my most endearing performances of his was a movie called Jack, where he played literally a child trapped in a man's body. And I think they said it even in the trailer that the role that Robin Williams was born to play. And there's no better way to describe that because Robin Williams is just such a kid at heart. And I mean that in a good way.
He named his kid Zelda.
He did.
After a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True story.
I liked What Dreams May Come. It's a beautiful film. Visually speaking, and I love the story, you know, that goes along with it of a man who dies and finds out that his wife kind of fell to pieces after his death and took her own life and went to hell, and he, you know, leaves heaven to search hell for her, and that's love.
That is love. My pick would be Death to Smoochie.
Oh, I love that movie.
So I wish more people would see that. He was so good in that. It was such a... It's the a world. Dark. He's really good in World's Greatest Dad, too. It's a really small...
Oh, that was so good. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, small movie. I wish more people would see that. But Death to Smoochie. Such good. A dark and evil little shit.
Save the Black Rhino.
More people should check it out. I think we can all acknowledge that we all loved his work and his craft, and he's a gifted person, as well as a comedian, as well as an actor. And obviously, he affected all of us one way or another. And in fact, Justin and Scott made them, you know, affected their lives specifically.
He left us a lot of laughter. Mm-hmm. So as sad as we are, there are a lot of reasons to laugh. Just watch his past work. He'll never fully die.
And I will leave you with one of my favorite quotes of Robin Williams, which I did put in the article as well. You're only given a little spark of madness. You mustn't lose it.
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion. Now, medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits and necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. To quote from Whitman, O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, what good amid these, O me, O life? Answer, that you are here, that life exists and identity, that the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. That the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. What will your verse be?